Okay, if you consider the boulder being divided in fifths, one fifth of it was a different type apparently by this sort of topographic contact. We took one chip from that side and one chip from the corner on the other side.
We copy that, thank you. We'd like for you to summarize the relationships of Mare and Apennine Front in the Elbow St. George area. And we're looking for any evidence whatever of a contact, an albedo change, or a change in coarse frag abundance. Over.
Joe, we looked and we discussed it before we went out, and we discussed it since we came back, and we honestly didn't see anything.
Roger, Dave, and you discussed it in about the same way during the traverse, so it sounds very consistent to us. Do you think that you can drive to either spur or to window crater?
Let us take a look here quick. Number of craters down there in the area of Spur and Window, and those are the only craters up on the Apennine Front. And there are several the same size as Spur and Window, which I think were not evident on the photography because of the albedo and the sun. I think we could get to some of those craters, yes. I'm not sure that it would be Spur or Window, but there are some craters up on the side of the front. I'm fairly sure we could get to.
Roger, Dave, copy that, and that is exactly the answer we were after, not necessarily those particular craters, but craters similar to them. And we understand exactly what you're saying. We'd like to ask, was the abundance of white and light gray rocks described in the vicinity of Falcon the same seen along the entire route to St. George? Or did this abundance of white and light gray rock seem to vary? Over.
Well, I think we have a great variety of fragments out here. I wouldn't want to pin down any particular type in any area until we had more time to look. We've got a couple of surprises for you. We have one fragment on the order of 6 inches, which is a fairly well-rounded, highly vesicular basalt with vesicles on the order of 3 millimeters all over it, apparently quite old and rounded, and it's a brownish gray. We also have a large piece of glass, just sheer glass, apparently, which is about a foot long and about 6 inches wide and very rough textured surface. And that was the one that was right out the front window here that I described yesterday. And the basalt we picked up halfway back when I had to change my seatbelt, I saw it on the ground and I just couldn't resist it. And it's unlike anything you've seen from the moon before, as is the large piece of glass. And I think those are indicators to me that we have a great variety of samples out there, and we really need to do some good, careful looking as we head down towards the front.
Roger, Dave, read you loud and clear on that. And that really brings us to our last question. We're in the process of starting to plan your traverse tomorrow. It's going to be a good one. We have no equipment problems that we're looking at right now. And we'd like to ask you if there are any particular inputs you would like to make into the planning team regarding tomorrow's traverse. Over.
Okay, let us talk it over a minute, please. Joe, we've talked it over, and we think the best thing to do is to stick exactly with the plan we have now. I think we understand what we're looking for, and even though we didn't find any some of the things we were looking for today, that doesn't mean that we won't find them as we head down to Front Crater. And I guess about the only input we'd have would be that if we can make as good a time on the rover tomorrow as we did today, perhaps we'd have more time to sample a variety of stations along the front and on the way back. But in general, I think we'd do better if we stuck with our pre-flight plan.
Right on, Dave. We copy that, and I think we're going that direction. Sounds good. We've got a couple more general questions and then a comment about the 16-millimeter camera. And after that, we're going to be closing up shop down here. One more geology question. Do you have any feel for whether the frags around the small, fresh craters that you've called out to us are in general pieces of the projectile, or do you think they're ejecta frags? Over.
Joe, we're pretty sure they're projectile frags, and that's when we really need to stop the sample.
Agreed, Dave. We think the same thing here. A quick comment on your 16-millimeter film. We think that that camera, the DAC, is still in good shape, that Mag Charlie was a bad magazine, and we think you can help us out on the other magazines left tomorrow by advancing the film with your finger just to make sure it's moving freely in the magazine before you clip it onto the camera itself. And that's something you can do while you're packing the ETB. You can do it tonight. Over.
All right, Joe. That's a good analysis. We took Mac Charlie and tried to run it with our fingers, and it won't run. It's absolutely jammed right at the beginning. And we'll run the others through tonight to make sure they'll work.
Sounds terrific. And Dave and Jim will be standing by for a crew status report. No hurry on that, and as I say, we're going to close up shop down here. We've got more data, really, than we know what to do with, but we'll work hard on it and be back with you in the morning. I do have liftoff time pad to send to you, Jim, when you're ready to copy.
Okay, he's got his pencil out. Go ahead.
Roger. Liftoff times, T28, 132, 1754. T29, 134, 1602. T30, 136, 1410. T31, 138, 12. 1-9-er. Over.
Okay, Joe, beginning on 28. 132-1754, 134-1602, 136-1410, and 138-1219.
Readback's correct. Jim, you've been doing good work all day.
Well, we're trying.
Roger. And Dave and Jim, one last comment, which we're pretty sure you're aware of. We think we're looking at an EVA tomorrow that'll run about 6.5 hours, about the same thing we did today. And we do have a few miscellaneous items to clean up. They're most likely at the end of the traverse, so it's liable to be a little shorter distance-wise, but otherwise, other than that, it'll be more or less unchanged. Over.
Okay, very good, Joe. By the way, did you notice that
I had a higher O2 usage all the way through, and is that why we're looking at 6.5 instead of 7 hours?
That's correct, Dave. We've got very good data points on you. It's a steady curve, and the O2 rate is just a little bit higher than we predicted. From the looks of it, you've really been doing some work up there.
Do you have any idea why there's a rate? Perhaps maybe a zipper could be lubricated or something like that?
Dave, this is a metabolic curve, plain and simple. It's not a leak rate at all.
Okay, well, I'll breathe a little less tomorrow.
We don't recommend that, although the surgeon's working on it right now. The numbers, actually, that we're coming up with, Dave, is about, or the two numbers are 1,150 BTUs per hour working and about 700 BTUs riding. Over.
Okay, that's a little higher on the riding than I think we expected, but it's sort of a sporty job to drive this thing to make sure we don't run into the craters. And if you can get that front steering figured out, it'll sure help.
Get 6.5 hours like you did today, guys. Nobody's going to complain.
Okay, Roger.
Dave and Jim, I'm going to sign off now, and I'm getting excited about tomorrow's traverse already. And Bob's coming on. Over.
Okay, Joe, you did a super fine job today, and we sure appreciate you keeping track of us and keep us going in straight lines. We'll be looking forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Wouldn't miss it for the world.